Just about the time the elders get us all excited, we're going to go into this new Bible class program. Somebody says, oh, it won't work. Just about the time that the members are beginning to grab hold of the need to set up time daily with their family for Bible studying and for prayer, somebody says, no, you'll be too busy. You won't be able to keep your schedule. Just about the time that we're getting all in the church excited about going out and knocking on doors and studying with our friends and neighbors and trying to convert them to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, somebody said, personal work won't work in this area. We tried that back 10, 15 years ago, and we never did see any results of it. And so just about the time you try to get that fire built, somebody's ready to put out the fire. So I guess my lesson tonight is sort of on the negative side. I guess tonight we're going to have to talk about some of those things that we've got to look, and if we find it in ourselves or if we find it in the congregation, we've got to try to get rid of it. We've got to uproot it. We've got to destroy it. Because we've got to try to be looking forward and pressing forward and be on an optimistic level. There are some people that just continue playing these little games, though. And that certainly hinders our growth. I'm sure that you've met a member or two along the way that they're not what they ought to be. And rather than admitting that they're weak, and rather than calling out for your help and trying to pray for them and strengthen them, they just want to blame someone else. They'll make excuses. Well, they haven't been very friendly to me. I was in a gospel meeting in northern Alabama, and there was a family there that decided they were just going to quit the church. When one of the elders went and talked to them and asked, what's the matter? Well, nobody would talk to me. So I asked the elder about that. You know, I thought it was a rather friendly congregation. They'd been at least friendly to me as I was a visitor there preaching. And I said, what's the problem? They said, well, Bob, the problem is this family always comes in late. The services have already gotten started. They come in during about the second song. And then at the end of services, they leave before the last song's even over. And then go home pouting. Nobody spoke to me. That's sort of the kind of family you like right in the middle of a sermon. Say, time out. Everybody stop now. Go back here to the back pew and be sure and speak to these folks, because they're liable to go home saying we're not very friendly. Somebody says if you're looking for an excuse, you're going to find one. And some people are weak and they're not what they ought to be, and so therefore they want to blame someone else. Well, Bob, they had a birthday party or they had an anniversary celebration and they didn't invite me. Or I was in the hospital for 3 days and nobody came to see me. Well, did you tell anybody at church you were going to the hospital? No, but they should have found out some way. Now, we'll tell the newspaper boy, now I'm going to the hospital, don't deliver the paper for 3 days. We'll tell the milkman, I'm going to the hospital, don't leave that quart of milk. We'll tell the next door neighbor, I'm going to the hospital, be sure and look out the house and make sure nobody breaks. We'll tell everybody except the folks at church and then get mad at them because they don't call us, come see us, or send us a card or wire some flowers to us. Oh, well now, that's the reason I'm becoming weak. That's the reason I'm becoming a little unfaithful. That's the reason I don't love the church and love the Lord anymore, because you all haven't really cared much about me. You all haven't been very friendly to me. All we're trying to do is pass the blame to somebody else. We're trying to pass the buck. So what if I've been unfriendly to you? What did the Lord do to you? So what if you get mad at me? Why take it out on the Lord? That makes just about as much sense as getting mad at the cat and going out the front door and kicking the dog. If you're mad at me, you handle that with me. Don't take it out on the Lord. But somebody said, well, that's what I was looking for. I'm going to quit now. I'm not going to worship anymore. God's going to get the blunt end of this. Oh, yes, all in the world it is just making excuses. We're trying to shift the blame. They're responsible. I'm a whole lot better off than they are. Well, those little old hypocrites over there. And really, all in the world that it is just a mask. It's just trying to cover up our own failures. failure, for our own inconsistencies, and for our own unwillingness to admit I'm weak and I need to be growing. There are other people that play other games. It may be that you've met some of these folks that it seems to be their game is let's just see how old-fashioned and stubborn we can be. And let's see how boring we can make some of our Bible classes. Have you ever been in some of these Bible classes where it's sort of fill in the blank? And the student goes home blank and unfilled? Or you've been to one of these Bible classes and the teacher says, oh, and now let's see. Does anybody remember what chapter we quit on last week? That's sort of a tip-off. They haven't done a whole lot of studying during the week. And so you get there and say, okay, now, brother so-and-so, you read those first three verses and then just sort of tell us what they mean. And so he reads those three verses and he hums, haws around a little bit. Says, well, just sort of means what it says and says what it means. All right, that's good. Let's go to the next brother now. Would you read three or four verses? Well, you can cover 25 verses, 25 chapters if you want to. Well, what have you learned? But if somebody suggests, well, let's really get in here and dig into this chapter. Let's find some modern-day applications. Oh, no, no, we don't want to do it that way. We've never done it that way before. So the teacher goes up here and he wants to write on this fancy board. Why, what's the matter? You going liberal or something? We're going to turn on the overhead projector. What are you trying to do? Entertain us now, showing some movies? I believe there are churches that have brethren that think, well, in order to be sound in the faith, we've got to be as monotonous as we can, and we've got to be as boring as we can, and that's a sign of our soundness. I believe we got some of those brethren that do some of our printing for us. We think if we, as tiny as we can get it, and as ugly as we can make it look, the more sound in the faith it is. Well, I picked up one back there a while ago. I mean, that's a bright red one. There's some people who wouldn't like that. I like that. That catches your attention. But I believe some people think it's supposed to look ugly and it's supposed to look drab and tiny print to prove that it's sound in the faith. And some people act like that's the game they're playing with our Bible classes. But then every now and then you find some of these people playing another game. Their game seems to be, let's see how many new converts we can drive off. So we go out here and we teach somebody and we baptize them and they're all excited. I mean, they are on fire for the Lord. And this new convert runs into Bible class and says, guess what? I just discovered the book of Habakkuk. I didn't even know it was there. And they're all excited. Tell me what's the application? What do I learn? What's this all about? And somebody says, hey, you know, we're not under the Old Testament. I wouldn't even waste my time reading that. They sort of scratch their head. Well, what's wrong here? They're wanting to learn something about the kings, or they're wanting to learn something about the judges. Oh, well, I wouldn't waste my time reading. I just spend all my time studying the book of Acts. And that new convert gets a little discouraged. Or that new convert comes in and says, well, you know what? I heard the other day they started a new church over in Germany. Isn't that exciting? Or I heard they started a new congregation up there in Canada somewhere. Isn't that wonderful? Or did you hear 2 months ago they started a new congregation out at Salt Lake City? Isn't that wonderful? Oh, I wouldn't get too concerned about that. I mean, we haven't converted everybody right here at Xenia yet, so I wouldn't care about those people in Canada or out there in Utah or over there in Germany or in the Philippines or Australia. Well, I wouldn't waste my stamp to send those people a letter and try to commend them and build them up and get them excited. I wouldn't fool with that. And consequently, many of them go onto these foreign fields and they get a little discouraged because they think nobody back home cares. I've talked to a lot of these preachers that have been in foreign fields. And I realize that they are dependent upon some of the checks that they get from the United States. They need that money to live off of. But I talked to one man that lived on foreign soil for 10 years. And he said every month he'd go to the mailbox and there'd be that little old number 10 envelope and he'd rip it open and he'd pull out that check. And every month he'd look, he thought, well, surely this month there's going to be a little note in there. Surely this month they're going to say, hi, how are you? Surely this month they're going to ask about the work. Surely there's going to be a little note with a couple of scriptures written out on it. Or there's going to be a little scribbling saying, we're praying for you and we're concerned. And he said, month after month, year after year, all it was just the check. Oh yeah, he needed the check. He had to have the money in order to pay the bills and to live. But he said there were months I would almost have traded the check back for a letter of encouragement. But we sometimes think, well, he's the one who wanted to go over there. Let him worry about that. And if that new convert gets excited about that preacher in Germany or that preacher in Ireland or that preacher in Norway or Brother Reeves over in Japan or one of these other preachers somewhere, we think, well, what's wrong with you? Now, I used to get excited like that for a while, but I soon got over that. And then we drive away many of these new converts. But the book of James talks about another problem. I believe a bunch of them were playing some games. It's found in James, the 4th chapter. I believe it's a very dangerous game. The 4th chapter here tells us the object of the game. It tells us the rules of the game, if you're going to play it. And then it tells us just exactly what God thinks about it. Notice with me now in James chapter 4. We start reading with verse 11. It says, speak not evil of one another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother, speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgest another? Now let me just stop with those two verses and then we'll come back in a moment and we'll finish that chapter. It seems that one of the favorite New Testament games was playing like that you're God. Now, we look at this and see that apparently it was quite common in that day. And I'm afraid with too many church members today, it's still rather common. Now, these two verses start off here showing us that these people were going to play God with other people. Now the objective is to picture yourself and imagine that you are far superior than everyone else. You just sort of paint some kind of a mental picture now as to how much better that you are than everyone else. And then you start putting these people down in various ways. You start saying different things about them and you start feeling different things and thinking different things. And so there again, you just, in that sense, you start playing God and just sort of puffing yourself up as to how much better you are than everyone else. Now, if you want to play God with a brother or a sister, James says do two things. A combination of the two or any one of the two. First of all, you can start speaking evil against that brother or sister. And then secondly, to start judging that brother or sister. Now these are the only two rules. If you want to develop that idea of playing God, then you just get started talking someone else down. Now remember what your goal is. If you're going to play this little game, your goal is to lower the estimate that they might have of someone else. Now remember also that you're playing a game, so you got to be real sneaky about it. You got to be real careful the way that you do it and play the game so that you don't get caught. Listen sometimes to the way that people start their conversations. You'll hear somebody say, well, now stop me if I'm wrong, but now I believe. Or they'll say something, well, now maybe I shouldn't be telling you this, but now I heard that. Or another interesting, they'll say, well, now I don't mean to be critical, but. And then they'll go ahead with their little story. Or another one seems to be, when I can't prove that this is true, but you see, they're playing a game. When they say, stop me if I'm wrong, they don't want you to stop them. When they say, I don't mean to be critical, yes, they do. That's why they're getting ready to tell you what they're getting ready to tell you. When they're saying, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, that's right, they shouldn't be, but they're going to go ahead and say it anyway. Because they have propped themselves up on this little throne and they're pretending that they're God. What they're trying to do is to hurt someone. They think that by blowing out their light, that that'll make us look a little bit better. So we brag on this preacher that we went and heard the other day. Somebody says, oh yeah, but you don't know about him what I know about him. Or we brag about this song leader. Oh yeah, but I tell you, I know something about him you don't know. You wouldn't like him as much as you do if you knew what I know. Or we hear a wonderful compliment about this godly woman. Yeah, but now I'll tell you what, I don't mean to be critical, but let me tell you about that woman. Or maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but now let me tell you about that woman. And so we think, so that we can look a little bit better, we've got to blow the other fellow's light out. We're going to use our mouth now and we're going to pretend that we're God. We're just propping ourselves up here now and we're going to just try to wipe somebody else out by the things that we say about them. William Barclay has said in one of his books that one of the greatest sins that is spoken of so harshly in the Bible is the sin of gossip and the misuse of the tongue. Now, I'll tell you what, friends, if you've got some little juicy story that you want everybody to listen to, you just drop in the name of some preacher around in the area. You just drop in the name of one of the Bible class teachers. If you want everybody's ear to perk up, you just drop in the name of one of the elders. If you're not getting everyone's attention, you just start dropping in a few names and you're getting ready to be critical of someone. Then you'll have their full attention and then you can take that opportunity to play God. James said, stop it! He wrote like it was going on back then. It was a problem then. He said, we shouldn't be doing this. Now stop it! It was going on then and I'm convinced that it's still going on. If the Lord's church is going to be activated, going to be motivated in any given location, we're going to have to crawl down off of that throne. We stole it from God. We don't own it. It belongs to God. We don't know everything that we might think that we ought to know. When you look at this, it said, he that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law. Now, am I so smart that I think I am above all the rest of the brethren that I can sit up on this little throne and I can condemn this brother and this brother or this sister or this sister? Do I think that I know it all that I can pronounce the condemnation? Now, don't misunderstand me. This does not mean that one is never to be discerning of faults. It does not mean that we cannot suggest that Christians can share with each other's problems and point to a better way. It doesn't mean that we cannot converse with each other and explain our weaknesses to each other and say, will you pray with me? Will you encourage me? But I'm convinced that what James is talking about is this critical attitude that is a condemning attitude, that I'm not really telling you this so that we can work on it together to try to help this brother or sister. But I'm telling you this because I like to tear down that brother or that sister. I like to destroy them because that makes me look a little bit better. Somebody says, well, what's the problem in judging someone? The problem is that there are many times we don't know all that we need to know about that person. The problem is that many times they are reacting in a certain way and you may not know why they're reacting that way. I did volunteer work for a while with 7th and 8th grade students. There was one young girl that had been raped by her father. She reacted to a lot of different situations in a lot of different ways than other normal 7th and 8th grade girls. When my wife's sister was killed in an automobile accident, she knows what section of the interstate that that accident happened. And for a long time, we would have to take a side road because she didn't want to go down that section of the interstate. Now, you might have thought she was foolish. You might have thought she was being overreactionary, that she was being too emotional. But you see, there are many times that there are things in the back of someone's mind. Maybe a certain song on the radio will cause someone to react in a strange way, and we don't know why. Oh, there are a lot of things that happen, and people say things and do things and react in certain ways, and we sometimes don't know why. And that's the whole point that I'm trying to get across. Who am I to think that I am so smart that I know everything, and I think that person is being rather ridiculous in the way they're carrying on? There are many times I don't know what's going on inside their mind. I don't know what's happened in their past. I don't know what family troubles there may be. I don't know what financial disaster they've just overcome. I don't know why they say what they say and do what they do and react the way they react. And since that it is not within my ability and within my power to know everything about everybody, I don't have the right to run my mouth to be critical and to be condemning and judging. Somebody might say, well, now, Bob, does that mean that you can't do any judging? Oh, no. We look back in Matthew, the 7th chapter, and we learn that the type of judging that we do, the type of judging we use, is the kind of judging that we're going to receive. James said that if you judge and speak against your brother, you're speaking against the law. What law is he talking about? Well, you may disagree with me. I believe he's talking about a law back in the 2nd chapter. In verse 8, he was talking about the royal law. The idea of loving your neighbor as yourself. I believe that's the law he's talking about. The matter of using a little kindness. The idea of using a little bit of mercy. The idea of using a little bit of love. These are serious laws that need to be observed by Christians. And if you run your mouth and speak evil against the brother and you are judging and condemning the brother, then you're speaking evil against this kind of law. Maybe it's a matter of putting into practice that of the golden rule. Maybe it's treating someone else the way that we want to be treated. I don't know whether Robert Jackson has ever been here to Knollwood for a gospel meeting or not. Some of you know Brother Jackson, a fine gospel preacher in Nashville, Tennessee. But I heard him relate a story that happened to him in Nashville. It was a Friday night, it was raining, and there was a lady from the congregation that saw Robert Jackson that night in his automobile, and she said, "And Robert, I saw that you had a woman with you." Now, I couldn't tell who it was, but I could tell it wasn't your wife. And she had been busy for 2 days being on the telephone telling everybody that she saw the preacher with some woman Friday night. Those of you that know Robert and his little sense of humor say, "Well, I guess you caught me, didn't you? I guess you're going to tell everybody now." But what she didn't bother to check out, that wasn't his wife, but it was his daughter. But you see, she had already been busy on the telephone calling folks, "I caught the preacher with another woman." She set herself up on that little throne as if she had all the answers. She knew it all. Back several years ago, there was a lectureship held in Tennessee. A lot of different preachers were invited to come in as speakers. A different speaker in each hour of this lectureship. There was one young preacher that as he stood up, it seemed that just over and over he would lose his train of thought. He would lose the passage that he was trying to find in the Bible. He would stammer and he would stumble, and it just seemed that he didn't know where he was wanting to go in his lesson. And finally, after he was concluded and the next preacher spoke, and then they finally had an intermission and there were several preachers standing around talking. There was one older preacher sort of standing off to the side listening to a bunch of the other preachers. And they got to talking about the young man that had made such a mess of things. One of them said, well, it was almost embarrassing how terrible he did. I mean, he couldn't remember his passage. He'd try to turn and read it. He would stumble on the words. He couldn't read it like it was supposed to be read. He couldn't remember his next point. He was fumbling around and just unorganized. And just like his mind was somewhere, it was a disgrace to have to sit there and listen to him. It was a shame. I'm embarrassed if we had any visitors. And they went on and on. And finally the old man sort of took all of it he wanted to hear. And he walked over and he said, are you guys through now? Anybody else want to be critical? Anybody else want to say something about the young preacher? Because there's a couple of things that I want to tell you. 20 minutes before that young preacher walked into the pulpit, he received a phone call from back home telling him that his precious 2-year-old son had been run over by an automobile and killed. The elders encouraged him to get in his car and to go on and head home. He said, no, I came here to try to preach. And as hard as it's going to be, I'm going onto the pulpit and I'm going to try to do it. And then the old man said, and that's not all. Just a few months ago, the doctor had told his wife that she has leukemia and has less than a year to live. Now with those two burdens on his heart, he walked onto the pulpit and he tried to deliver that sermon anyway. And the men that had been so critical said, oh, we didn't know that. Oh, I'm sorry. If I'd have known that, I wouldn't have said what I said. And that's the whole point. There are many times, there are many situations with men and women that we don't know the whole story. We don't have all of the facts. The American Indians used to have a proverb that said, I'll never condemn a brave until I've at least walked 1 mile in his moccasins. That means that we've got to try to get all of the facts. And so we see, we're dealing with a lot of negativism here. And that'll destroy you. That will destroy a home. That'll destroy a business place. That'll destroy your football team or your basketball team. It'll destroy your church. Now, if you're playing God, you're going to have to be sure and overlook all the good in them. You're just going to be out looking for the bad. You're going to try to play down. You're going to try to speak evil of them. You're going to have a petty, critical spirit. And I'm convinced there are many people that have that kind of a disposition. And James is evaluating it here. But then you look at verses 13 through the end of the chapter. He leaves the idea of playing God with others now. And he talks about some that's playing a different game. And those are the people that's now going to play God with himself. He starts off in verse 13. Go to now, ye that say today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Perhaps this little game that James says that some people are playing is the most self-disillusioning of all of them. Because with those other verses we looked at, you were playing God with other people. But now you're playing God with yourself. You try to imagine yourself as the final authority in your life. You sort of put God in a little box and you just call on Him when you need to. I believe some people have the idea that's why we build church buildings like this. You hide God in here. You lock Him up in these four walls. You just come on Sunday morning and just sort of raise the lid of the box. Well, hello, God. I came to check on you. I'll see you next Sunday. Some people have this four walls concept of Christianity. You see, friends, I'm a Christian everywhere or I'm not a Christian. I'm faithful to the Lord in every activity of my life or I'm not a faithful Christian. And that I don't need to be playing games to think that I am the final authority. Now, James says the rules here, you just sort of plan your own life and do it any way you want to. You plan all of your activities and you don't take God into account. You plan your activities and you don't think about anybody else. Oh, now these rules are specially designed for the businessman. These rules are specially designed for that career woman. You sort of plan your schedule and you leave God out of it. You just go ahead and do your own thing. Do as you please. That's why verse 13 says, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over there and I'm going to buy some property. I'm going to stay about a year and I'm going to sell that property and I'm going to make a pretty good profit off of that real estate adventure. So you just go ahead and make those kinds of plans very selfishly. You plan your own schedule. I'll stay there for 1 year, then I'll sell and then I'll move on. You go ahead and you engage in your affairs. You go ahead and you think about all that profit that you're going to make. But James says, who's going to guarantee you that you've got 1 year to live and stay in that city? Now here's what you ought to say. You ought to say in verse 15, if the Lord will, we shall do this or we shall do that. I can't say that I will be back in this building tomorrow night. I might die during the night. My heart may quit beating. We may be involved in some kind of an automobile accident tomorrow. There may be some freakish accident. I don't have to tell you about tornadoes coming through Xenia, do I? You know about fires. You know about all kinds of calamities. Who's to guarantee that I've got a tomorrow? And that's the whole point that James is trying to get across. You need to make your plan. Say, now Lord, here's what I'm planning. I'm planning to stay in this city for a year. I'm planning to buy real estate and sell it and make some profit. But now, Lord, I'm making my plans, but you just step in anytime you want to. You know, none of us in this building tonight want to go to hell. But I wonder how many of us here tonight have a real hungering to go to heaven. Oh, well, I spent too much time and too much money on my house. I just now got my car and my boat paid off. I got my stereo fixed up just the way I wanted. I'd like to stay here on earth forever and ever. I believe there's some people that wish that they could be convinced that Jehovah's Witness doctrine was correct, that you'd live on earth forever. That's why the Bible says we're strangers and pilgrims here. We don't belong here. This isn't home. We're just passing through. Now, are you getting homesick? Is heaven really going to be your home? Do you really want to go there? If you had your choice of walking out of this building and you could either go to this earthly home and stay there forever or go and be with God through eternity, which one would you choose? Maybe we need to take another spiritual inventory. Maybe we need to take another look at our life. When you look at God's evaluation of it here in James 4, He said, you have no knowledge of a tomorrow. The wise man back in Proverbs said, boast not thyself of a tomorrow. You know not what the day holds for you. You don't have the assurance of a long life. And you don't have the right to ignore God's will. Now this is true whether you're gray-headed or whether you're a teenager. You don't know how long you're going to live. You don't know how many more tomorrows you've got. You don't know how many more invitation songs you're going to be able to sing, how many more sermons you're going to hear. You've got to get off of that throne and quit playing God. Don't play God with other people, trying to run them down and condemn them and judge them. And don't play God with yourself, trying to plan your affairs without taking God into consideration. But somebody says, well, now, Bob, I'm healthy, I'm strong. I mean, my old heart's just ticking away, and I'm just as content, and I'm just as secure, and such good health. There's plenty of time left, plenty more days, plenty more sermons, plenty more songs to be sung later. So that old heart just keeps a-ticking. Just keeps beating away. We know we're a sinner. We know if we died tonight, we'd be lost. We know that we'd split hell wide open. But there are plenty more days. Later on, I can change. Later on, I'll render obedience. Later on, I'll repent. Later on, I'll confess. Later on, I'll be baptized. I'm strong. I'm healthy. Listen to that old heart beating. So we just keep putting it off. We just keep waiting. Later, we'll straighten up. Not tonight. Later on. Are there some that are Christians, but they know they've been unfaithful. They know they need to repent, but they say, later. Later. I'll plan my affairs the way I want to, when I want to. Listen to that old heartbeat. I'm strong. I'm healthy. Later, I'll do what's right. So we keep putting it off. We just keep waiting. We just keep procrastinating. And for now, that heart just keeps beating. Just like that, it could stop. That's James's whole point. You don't know that you'll have it tomorrow. Don't leave God out of your plans. Don't play God. Get off of the throne. Give it back to Him. It's His. If you know there's something you need to do, you better do it right now. It's the only time you're guaranteed of. We bid you to do it while together we stand and sing.